We're going to turn to Ruth. We've been doing a series in the book of Ruth. It's a book in the Old Testament. It comes after the book of Judges. It goes Joshua, Judges, Ruth. And that's actually chronological order there. It's page 269. If you don't have a Bible, Wendy, or I think that's Iris as well, are just helping pass out Bibles there. So please just open to 269. It's going to help you to have it in front of you. And basically, it's after Joshua, which is a book about victory, and Judges, which is a book about defeat, you then come to this book of Ruth, which is just a book about an ordinary woman, a widow, about her mother-in-law called Naomi, and about this man called Boaz, who God seems to be bringing the two of them together, and there seems to be a bit of a chemistry between them. And it's an amazing story because you've just had these incredible books of battle and of defeat and of all these kind of things. And here's this love story, basically. But a love story that you see turning around the nation. So I want to read Ruth chapter 3, and we're looking at this idea of traveling with purpose. So Ruth chapter 3, verse 1. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, that's Ruth's mother-in-law, said to Ruth, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. And when he lies down, note the place where he is lying, and then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." Now, just want to pause right there and just say, this lying down at the feet of someone is something actually that slaves used to sometimes do to keep their kind of master's feet warm. You can imagine the kind of situation. This is probably even a corporate kind of setting. They're all been celebrating the harvest, and then they kind of lie down to sleep. And it gets quite cold, even in these really hot places at night. So just want you to kind of get the sense of what's going on here. But still, this is obviously important to the story, as we shall see. So what's going to happen? Verse 7. "When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. And Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. 'Who are you?' he asked. 'I am your servant Ruth,' she said. 'Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer.'" Don't worry if you don't know what that is. That's one of the things we're going to look at as we look at this talk tonight. "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. And although it is true that I am a near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. So stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." And when she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. And when Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." We might have to wait till next week to see the rest of the story. Traveling with purpose, that's our title tonight. And I want you just to look at the opening line that Naomi says to Ruth. She says this: "One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you?' And these two have been traveling from Moab, and they're traveling back to the land of Israel, and they got there, and you could have thought, well, that's the end of their journey. But actually, there's still a purpose, still something they're heading towards, and Naomi wants to find a kind of home for Ruth. And in that culture, finding a home, a kind of settled, secure place for not just you, but for future generations, you could only do that if you found, guess what? A man, husband. So really, this is what I want us to unpack a bit tonight. What it is to find a man, or if you're a bloke, maybe to find a woman. And I want us to look and see what we can learn from this story, but I also want us to see not just what we can learn about relationships, but what can we learn about God from this story tonight. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, relationships. And you're either thinking, great, this is why I came tonight. I knew it was going to be about relationships, and I love this story, and I want to learn all I can about that. Or you're thinking, oh, no. I hate talking about relationships. Conjures up all these things. And maybe actually those two are more closely linked than we sometimes think. And we sometimes get excited, but there's pain there as well. And as I look around this room and I think of all the different stories of our lives, I'd imagine there are, I don't know, as many different stories as there are people here of different relationships, some that have worked, some that haven't. And I was just thinking about this, and I wonder if you've got a little piece of paper in front of you. I don't know if I did have, and then I've lost it. But take the little piece of paper maybe you've got in front of you. If you've got one, oh, there's my little piece of paper. And grab a blank one, and it might have been the one you wrote on, even those names. And this might be work. And I want you to see how many times you can fold it up. If you don't have a bit of paper, I don't know if we've got any more that can be given out. Did we use them all up before? So you've probably got one from writing your names of some people on it. But I want you to take it and see how many times you can fold this bit of paper. And when I mean fold, I don't just mean fold a little corner of it. I mean fold it over. So every time you're folding it in half, okay? See how many times you can fold it over, okay? Here we go. And you can do it whatever way you like. So you can do it whichever way. You're seeing how many times you can fold it over. The more, the merrier. You're aiming for the highest number you can. So you can hold it over like this and like this and like this. There's a bit, few more spare bits of paper. Okay, I want people to shout out the highest number you get to. Count the number of times. I'm going to stop talking here. Six. Six. Someone's got six. Seven. Someone's got seven, Mike. Someone else has got seven. What? I'll talk to you afterwards, Joel. Different ways? Okay. Do you want to know something? There are loads of different ways you can fold a piece of paper like this. But there is no one here who'll be able to fold it more than seven times. That's why one of those mathematical things. Love it. It actually doesn't matter even how large the bit of paper is. I think it does depend a little bit on the thickness, so it might vary. But paper like this, no more than seven times. So what can we learn from that? What's that got to do with the story of Ruth and the story of relationships? Well, it's got this to do with it. As you think about relationships, I want you to just get this. From the story of Ruth and from what I'm going to talk about tonight, there are tons of differences in the way you can do relationships. The way relationships work out, as varied and diverse as people are. But there are also some principles which all relationships encounter. There are some things, biblical principles, that God has so wired into the way we work as men and women, that actually if we don't understand them, we don't come to grasp them, then we're not going to really be able to have relationships that work. So as I talk tonight, you're going to need discernment, and as you look and as you read stuff, when there are some great books on relationships over there, and there's people around that we can talk to, but you're going to need discernment sometimes tonight. Is that just how it worked for them? And you can't copycat someone else's relationship. You can learn things from it. You can't copycat it. Or is there a principle there that I can take home and really apply? So I want us to to look at this story tonight and see what are some of the principles. And the first question I want to ask as we think about how to find a man or a woman is this. Do I need to make an effort? Do I need to make an effort? And I ask this because I think sometimes it can, you know, I've sometimes come across people, it seems kind of more spiritual to not to. But let's just have a read in this story here and see what happens with Naomi and Ruth. Ruth says to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz..." Is this just... there it's gone again. "Is not Boaz, whose servant girls you have been with, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourselves and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor and don't let him know that you're there until he has finished eating and drinking. And when he has, lie down and take note where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." I see three things here. I'm not going to spend long on any of them, but I think these three things are things that it actually is worth making an effort on if you're trying to find a man or a woman. And if you are already in a relationship, I think these things are still worth making an effort at. Here they are. Planning. Have a plan. Nothing wrong with a plan. Godly plans are good things. Strategies. Next one, presentation. It's good to wash. The other person appreciates it. It's nice to even sometimes make an effort in terms of how you're clothed and how you're presented. That is good. And lastly, timing. There are good times to try and have a conversation with someone, and there are other times when it just is not a good time. There are times for special moments, and it's worth thinking about when that time might be, and other times when it's not a good time. And again, you see that here in these passages. And I would say, if you're thinking about a relationship, I just want to ask a question. Are you making an effort? Are you actually making an effort in terms of thinking of a godly plan? Are you thinking about how you present yourself? Make an effort there. And are you thinking about issues of timing? And I would say, if you are married, still do these. Still, with my wife, I'm glad, I'm thankful when she makes an effort. And one of the things that I checked that with her before I say, so you know, and one of the things that drew me to her when we first started going out was that I thought, well, she's good. She's, she was impressed me. And, you know, men appreciate that. And I tell you what, actually, Boaz here appreciates Ruth. And I think what happens sometimes, I'll just speak for men here. I think sometimes women, when you make an effort, sometimes insecure men might mock it and then run a mile if you've got a plan and a presentation you're timing. But I'd just say, men, if you're secure, I think that's great to appreciate. And then the flip side, I'm sure, is true for the women, but I can't speak for that. I just want to say that that's something I've appreciated a lot, and I appreciate still as we're married. Now, also, let me just say caveat to all this, and we're going to come on to this. If Laura has a day when she's having a bad hair day, doesn't make an effort, I still love her. That's not, you know, this is not what our relationship hinges on, but just as a little thing, it helps. So not main point of what I'm saying, but it's there. Okay? Are you with me on that? Do I have any amens from the men? Okay, but let me just then ask you a question. This is a little maybe discussion point on your table. I've got two questions for you. Because I think this is quite a loaded issue, and even sometimes we think about things like planning, presentation, and timing, and we think about, you know, trying to get into a relationship or find a man or a woman, and we can sometimes think, this is terrible. Or even Ruth could have maybe said to Naomi, she said, "Naomi, what's the point? Look at my situation. Look at what's going on in my life. Look at who I am." And she could have said, "There's no way I'm going to find anyone. There's no way this is going to work." And actually, look at this top question here up on the screen. What were some of the things about Ruth's situation that could make her think, "There's no hope, I won't find anyone"? And I wonder, just if you've been on this series for a while, or you know the story of Ruth, you might just be able to know some of the things that Ruth could have said to Naomi at this point and said, "Look, there's no hope, I won't find anyone." And just on your table, just talk about that briefly. And then also, just if you can, go on to the next question. If you had or have children, what are the two main things you would try to encourage them to look for in a spouse? And I wonder if you've got any overlap between those two questions. Okay? Go for it. Just about a couple of minutes or so. Well, let me just say some of the things I observe in Ruth. Ruth, she was poor. She was a widow. She was a foreigner in a place where foreigners like that weren't meant to kind of be kind of included. There were lots of things stacked up against her. And, you know, you might have even thought of others. And as I was thinking about those, they were all great excuses that Ruth could have brought. But actually, so often, the things that we might sort of kind of rule ourselves out of, actually, with, you know, if we really think about it, they're not often the main things that we think are important in a relationship. And as I think about my two little girls, you know, I'm praying for them to have someone who loves God, a person who's really got a heart for God, and someone who loves them. And actually, all that stuff about, you know, how wealthy they are, or what country they're from, or that kind of stuff, that's, you know, that isn't a biggie. And actually, as we look at Boaz, even though Ruth had gone to all this effort and some of these, you know, external things, actually, we're going to look and see what Boaz really rates in Ruth and what he appreciates most. And it's this. Look down with me at Ruth chapter 11. No? That would be hard. Ruth chapter 3, verse 11, it says this, "And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman who makes an effort to dress well and wears perfume." Is that your translation there? No. "All my fellow townsmen know that you're a woman of noble character." Second question, how important is character in this whole issue of relationships? Very, very, very important. Far more important than that top point. Top points, great, it's worth making. But this is really important. Look at some of the character things in Ruth. Firstly, look at verse 5 and 6. "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered to her mother-in-law. And notice she's getting her advice on relationships, not just from her peers or from the local Bethlehem media, but she's getting it from those who are more life experience from her and who love her and who care for her. And I just want to encourage folks, as you think about relationships, particularly maybe those who are less senior in years, see what you can learn from those who are more senior in years. I find a great question to ask people if I'm sometimes get time with them over coffee or a meal is just say, how did you come together? And listen and learn. And what you see here in Ruth is that she learns and submits to the advice of those around her. She's submissive. It's the first thing I want you to see. She's submissive and she seeks godly advice. I would just want to say this. In the whole realm of relationships, most people in our city get their advice on relationships from the media or from their peers. Almost solely. Let me say something radical. Why not get it from the Bible and from those with more life experience from you? And maybe your relationships might work out better than your friends that are always going wrong. Now, we'll pick up stuff from the media and we'll pick up stuff from our friends, and we got to live in our current times. But there's a wealth of wisdom out there. Shall I just, let me just pause on this point. And I shared a bit about Ruth at the Tuesday afternoon service, which is for some of our more senior folks. And as I was sharing about Ruth, I said at the end, if anyone just has got a story of how you came together, I'd love to hear it. Some of you might know Les and Beryl. And this is what Les and Beryl wrote down. I said, just give me a paragraph on how you came together. They write this: "It took a war to bring us together. At the time of the Second World War, Beryl's family worshipped at Holland Road, and they used to walk as a matter of principle to the morning and evening services from Five Ways in Brighton." That's challenging just in itself. "However, the children were allowed to travel by bus to afternoon Sunday school, but when the buses became unreliable due to stoppages during air raid warnings, Beryl and her brother and sisters were sent to nearby Brethren Assembly, Hollingdean Hall, for Sunday school and Covenanters, which was like their kind of midweek group that they had. That was the church where Leslie was a member. However, at the time, Leslie was away serving in the RAF overseas, but when he returned at the end of the war, Beryl was serving as a covenant leader in his church. It was not long before they realized that God had brought them together and they were married in 1949. 60 years later, they are still happily married. They have always acknowledged that it was divine providence that brought them together. I bet many in this room, hoping that their marriage will last 60 years. Why not take some time to listen to folks like that? Looked for those who were seeking God. What about this from June and Howard Hacker? Many of you will know them. They sit right at the back just there, often even on a Sunday morning. I had not long finished, says Howard, doing my national service in the army. My father had not long passed away, and my long-standing girlfriend had ended our friendship, so I was feeling very low. And one lunchtime, I wandered into the Bible bookshop and bought a copy of Vista, the Youth for Christ magazine. And when reading it that night, I found a list of people wanting pen friends. So I thought, here goes. I'll write to two or three of them. And I did so, and 10 days later, no replies. Then a letter from Wales, which is where June comes from. We carried on writing for several months. Then June came to visit, and after visits both ways and lots of letters, 3 or 4 a week, we decided to get married. So here we are, 51 years later. 5 children and 10 grandchildren, so successful marriages are still possible. Different stories, folding the paper thing, but start digging for principles underlying it, and you'll learn that there's a love for God, there's a character in these men and women that meant they were looking for people of character. And what we see in Ruth is there's this submissiveness. Next, just look at this, what you see, and we're just going to go briefly through some of this. When she comes, and you see in verse 7 and 8 that she does just what her mother-in-law said she should do. And in verse 9, you get this amazing statement, and Ruth saying, I am your servant, she said, spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. And what I just love here in Ruth is that she's so bold. She's this lady who's from another place, and yet she comes into this situation, and when he stirs in the middle of the night, she's really bold and says, spread the corner of your garment over me, since I am your kinsman redeemer. And I think that's a great quality to have in your life. It's a characteristic to be bold and courageous, but here's the other thing we see in that very same sentence. There's humility. I'm your servant. Spread the corner of your garment over me. I need a covering. And one of the things I've noticed in people's lives and marriages is that it's great to have boldness and courage, but if you just have that in a man or a woman and you don't have humility, it can sometimes be overpowering and ugly. And if you just have humility and there's no boldness and courage, it can sometimes just be a bit bland. But this combination we see in Ruth is a wonderful thing to foster in your life. You might even just think, which of those do you tend to err more to? Maybe think, how can I grow in the other? So she's submissive, she's bold, she's courageous, there's humility. But look also, lastly, in verse 7 to 14, as we've just maybe made the comment, as she, as we were reading it, she lays at his feet. She has integrity. She doesn't just fling herself at him and kind of climb into bed with him, as it were. And that kind of desperation to find a soulmate is so prevalent in our city that people will just throw themselves at each other. Having sex, sometimes even on their first date. Friends, one of the things the Bible is really clear on, one of these principles, is that sex is meant for marriage. Sex is meant for a lifelong covenant commitment. That's countercultural. But it's one of those principles. And what we see here is that she's a person of integrity. And notice this too about Boaz, man. When Boaz wakes up in the middle of the night and sees that she's, as it were, made a plan and got a strategy and obviously likes him and obviously wants this thing to go forward, and she's there, it's the middle of the night, she's vulnerable. What does Boaz do? He doesn't think, oh, great, take advantage of this. No. He treats her with respect. And he too acts with integrity. And he too acts with kindness. And Men, as you maybe notice that, look at that rain, wow. You maybe notice that there is a stirring in someone you maybe like and fancy, and that they think they fancy too, at you too, and there's a vulnerability and a desire that they're showing. Don't take advantage of that in the wrong way. Be wise men of integrity like Boaz. Take responsibility right from the start of a dating relationship. Say, I'm going to be someone who leads us both in good things, in timely things. Who knows how to say, let's be patient. But then also knows how to say, right, I'm going to do what steps I can to make this thing move on. And he doesn't delay, does he? So we get into now this last thing I want us to see. And that is that we see Boaz responding to Ruth's amazing bold request. Here she says, I am your servant, Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. What is all that about? What is a kinsman redeemer? Well, a kinsman redeemer is a kinsman, so someone who's of your kin or like you, in that sense, a kind of, a sort of near one you can relate to. That's a kinsman. And the redeemer bit is a word that's sometimes used of kind of slaves to sort of buy their freedom, to kind of give them freedom, give them a space and a purpose and establish them. And it's a word, a liberating word. It's a word that talks of providing for and of that sense that we looked at right at the start of bringing a home and a kind of a identity to them. And this word, kinsman redeemer, in the Hebrew, it's just all one word. It's G-O-E-L, goel. But they don't write with those G-O-E-L, but that's how it's written in English. It's this word of brings this one who is like me, but who frees me and establishes me. And so as we just come to this final point, I want to just ask the question, and we've got here this third point of a faithful kinsman redeemer. I really want to, this is my third point really, is Mr. Right out there? Or is Mrs. Right out there? Is there someone, kind of a fit for me, who can, as it were, just bring a freedom to my life and establish in a future and make a home with? I want you to notice this about Ruth. Particularly women notice this about Ruth. Ruth had a plan, but her plan was only as good as the man she was chasing. And he was a good man, a noble man. But if you go after a Muppet, and you've got a great plan, and you do all the right things, and you're someone of noble character, it will go horribly wrong. I guarantee you. So your plan is only as good as the man. And that raises the question even more, doesn't it? Well, is the right one out there? Is that even a helpful phrase, the one? Well, as I've thought about this, and as people have talked to me, I have to say this. I think it's not a helpful phrase if you're not yet married. So I think you just got to go with the Lord's leading in those situations, being as noble in your character as you can, doing those things of integrity, and just seeing where's God leading in that. If you are married, I think it can be a helpful phrase, as long as you know that the one is the one you're married to, and you don't get any funny ideas from like Friends Reunited or Facebook that maybe the one you are married to is not the one, because that is just duff. The one you're married to is the one. Okay? So I think that's how, as we look at God's providence in somebody, I think it's not a kind of fate deterministic thing that we need to get hung up about it. I think it's actually just helpful how God leads and journeys with us in relationship. And listen to what Peter Notting was saying last week about that, if you're there. So is Mr. Right, Mr. Perfect out there? Well, you know what, guys? You're not going to find a perfect girl. Girls? You're not going to find a perfect man, not around in Brighton and Hove. Because the perfect man came once. The kinsman redeemer, the one who fully is this picture of Boaz, the one who is like us in that he became a man and who sets us free and establishes a home for us for all eternity, the one who can make you be fully who you are, that one is Jesus Christ. And he is the right one. He is Mr. Right. He is perfect. There is none like him. And I want to say this, because I have to find myself in conversations like this so often. I want to say this. I am so thankful for my wife, and I'm so thankful for being married. But one of the things I had to wrestle with before then, and actually my wife was the first girl I ever went out with. I had like 21 years of no dating relationship. And many times in that thing, I wrestled with this question, well, can I be content in God? And one of the things I learned is that if I'm not first content because I think God is better than a wife might be, and Jesus is more wonderful than anyone else can be, then I was going to be sunk in marriage. Because actually, it's possible to find someone who's pretty great and still really struggle in marriage. Marriage is not the answer to all your problems. But Jesus is. Jesus is the answer to your biggest needs. And so many of us long for a partner in life. So many of us long not to be lonely. This is not just something when you're young. This is true when you're older. Maybe a spouse dies. You're thinking about the future. And I tell you what I see in, again, listen to these godly men and women who we have around us. What I see in them is that those who realized, even in their marriage, that it was their relationship with Jesus that was primary, that he was the one who was ultimately going to sustaining. And it wasn't that they were looking for their spouse to satisfy everything from them, but they were looking to Jesus, their kinsman redeemer, the one who was like them, the one who they could talk to, the one who they could actually know each day they're loved. Whatever mood their spouse might be in, once you get that, then it changes your relationships. It changes your marriage. It changes your singleness. It changes your widow or widowering. And if people knew, maybe you're here tonight, you'd love to have Mr. Right or Mrs. Right. But if you knew just how right Jesus was, you would think, well, I'll have him first. And if he's willing to have me, wonderful. The best thing in my life, bar none, this is my story, above everything, anything else, is Jesus Christ. And Jesus is like Boaz. That if we hotly pursue him and we come to him like Ruth did here and said in verse 9, I'm your servant, Ruth, spread the corner of your garment over me. Jesus, cover me. May I know your security. May I know that I'm yours. Since you are a kinsman redeemer. It's very bold. Why is she so bold? Because she knows Boaz is faithful. She knows Boaz is a good man. And you and I can come boldly to Jesus tonight. And we can say to Jesus, put the garment over me. Cover me. Cover me with your robe of righteousness that you won at the cross. And he will. He will. And you know what I love in this story? Is there's a sense that Boaz is so keen to do this that he's like not resting until he can get it done. You notice how it ends right at the end of Ruth chapter 3? Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. And you know, Jesus has been working. If you're here and you're not under his covering, if you don't know what it is to be, as it were, in a
committed relationship with him where you know he's committed to you and he loves you and he's forgiven you and you know he's preparing a home for you in heaven. If you don't know that security, he wants you to know it. He wants you to be in that kind of relationship to you. He doesn't want to settle. Even your being here today is no coincidence. He would love you to say to him, spread the corner of your garment over me. Cover me. He wants to do that tonight. And he wants you then to know, as you travel life with purpose, that he's then got this secure, eternal home, whatever you're going through. So I'm just going to lead us in a time now of prayer. And I would love to invite you to ask Jesus boldly to cover you. To spread, as it were, the corner of his garment over your life if you've never done that before. I would love to know that each one of us here is not leaving thinking, oh, I wish I had this or I wish I had that. But we leave kind of thinking, I've got Jesus. I belong to him. He belongs to me. We're together for all eternity. And that would put a smile on my face. But believe you me, if you just know how wonderful he is, he will put a smile on your face too. So let's just pause. And if you want to do that, if you want to commit yourself to him and you want to ask him to, as it were, cover you, just echo this prayer with me in your heart right now. Why not say to Jesus this? Jesus, I humbly come to you. You are my kinsman redeemer. I want to come under your shelter to be at home with you. I want to be yours. Thank you for all you've done for me and your love for me. Amen. Just will you keep your heads bowed, everyone? And if you prayed that prayer, I'd love to just catch your eye and as your pastor here tonight, be able to just connect with you after the service. So if you just want to just look up and just give me a wave with your hand right now. Everyone else's head's bowed, but I'm just looking around. Just if you prayed that prayer tonight, I'd love to just you to give me a wave. Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. Anyone else? You just wanted to make sure that that was that covering over your life tonight. Thank you. Lord Jesus, almost like at a marriage, we want to celebrate that you are so good. Such a wonderful person. So faithful. Lord, may each of those who've just responded tonight know that you will be faithful to them. Not just for the rest of their lives, but for all eternity. And Lord, I want to pray for others who maybe do know you and do love you and are content in you. But Lord, they're praying and longing for you to provide someone that they can share life with. Someone they can journey with you through life. You'll know if that's you. You don't need me to know. But I just want to pray for you right now. And I pray, Lord, that you would somehow work out your purposes. And Lord, I would pray, as I do for people in this congregation, I pray that you would provide wonderful spouses for those who are seeking for that in their life. And Lord, for those that are settled in the situation that you've given them, Father, I pray that they would know that they're still a part of this family. That there would be none who feel isolated and alone. And Lord, I pray in our mixed up culture, in this whole matter of relationships, Lord, that there would be something about the men and women of Holland Road Baptist Church, whatever age, that sets them apart, that the whole town would know that these are people of noble character, and that that would be something that draws people to you. And Father, we thank you for your grace. Lord, we all know what it is to not do relationships perfectly. You alone do that. So as we look with hope to our past, our future, we thank you that we can look back and ask for your grace to cover it. So Jesus, just may waves of your grace pour across this church, this people tonight. For we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.